May you be blessed. May you be a blessing. That's the way a friend of mine, a colleague, ends all the worship services in his congregation. Which sounds nice. I liked it when he told me that. But then I wonder, well, what does that really mean anyway? The word blessing can be a bit of an enigma to many of us as Unitarian Universalists. With so many here who identify as humanist or atheist, the concept of blessing is likely to evoke images of the Pope laying a hand on a child on TV more than something we would necessarily seek for ourselves or seek to share with others. Part of the challenge with the idea of blessing, I think, is its ephemeral, transient, intangible nature. It's like prayer in that way, or well wishes. I may offer you a blessing in my mind, but there is no obvious substance there, nothing you can hold on to. In fact, I'm reminded of a conversation I had with a member of this church earlier this year who had some pointed things to say about the all too common response of political leaders to tragedy or disaster, sending thoughts and prayers. Sure, we'll send thoughts and prayers to the people of Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. We'll send a big truck full of them, a big, wide open, empty truck full of nothing but thoughts and prayers. Empty. That's how we hear that term sometimes, and frankly, that's what it is sometimes, a big, empty bit of political or personal pablum with no substance and no merit. So it's not surprising if some of us react with skepticism to the concept altogether. Then there's the kind of blessing that's simply a turn of phrase. I've heard from my southern friends that you can say just about anything if you preface it with the words, "Bless his heart." There is even a poem written about it by Richard Newman. Here's how it goes. At Steak and Shake, I learned that if you add "bless their hearts" after their names, you can say whatever you want about them, and it's okay. "My son, bless his heart, is an idiot," she said. "He rents storage space for his kids' toys, and they're only 1 and 3 years old." I said, "My father, bless his heart, has turned into a sentimental old fool. He gets weepy when he hears my daughter's greeting on our voicemail." Before our steak burgers came, someone else blessed her office mate's heart, and as an afterthought, the jealous hearts of the entire anthropology department. We bestowed blessings on many a heart that day. I even blessed my ex-wife's heart. Our waiter, bless his heart, would not be getting much tip, for which no doubt he would bless our hearts. The poem goes on, but you get the idea. It's not the kind of blessing you particularly want someone to bestow on you. Then there's a third kind of blessing, one that is meant to have some kind of impact in your life, the opposite of a curse, like, may you have riches, may you live a long life, may you find love, may you recover the wallet you just realized you must have lost when you went to the bathroom at Starbucks yesterday afternoon. Specific wishes for good, that's a kind of blessing. Some will travel thousands of miles to find a blessing like that, or at least that's kind of a cliche. You know, lost soul goes to pilgrimage to visit guru on mountaintop to ask for wisdom or some good fortune, please. A genie in the bottle type of request. Bless me, change my life. Intercessional blessing, you might call that. When my dad was sick, his Catholic friends would often light candles for him at their church services. Now, I don't know exactly what their theology was behind that action, but I know it didn't line up with my dad's. My dad was very clear he did not believe in intercessional prayer or intercessional anything, really, because from his perspective, there is nothing there to do the interceding. I suspect in many UU churches, he wouldn't be the only one with that belief. Nevertheless, when a friend told him he would light a candle for him and then immediately follow that up with, "Oh no, you don't believe in it," my dad then answered, "When you do it, I know it will help." And he didn't say that because he thought his friend's candle would cause some external force to save his life. But it mattered to my dad to know his friends cared enough to think of him. While I can't say I know whether there is or is not some external interceding force at work when we pray or bless each other, I do believe there is something going on inside, or there can be, some ephemeral, intangible intention rising up in the heart and mind, an entirely invisible gift that just might help somehow. It might help the person you are blessing, and it might even help you. In her book, An Altar in the World, Barbara Brown Taylor notes how few people seem to embrace the spiritual practice of blessing, and that on the whole, most of us just don't really know how this works. The best way to discover what pronouncing blessings is all about, she writes, is to pronounce a few. The practice itself will teach you what you need to know. Start throwing some blessings around, and chances are you'll start noticing all kinds of things you never noticed before. The next time you're at the airport, try blessing people sitting at the departure gate with you. Every one of them is dealing with something significant. See that mother over there trying to contain her explosive 2-year-old? That pock-faced boy over there with the huge belly. Even if you cannot know for sure what is going on with them, you can still give a care. They are on their way somewhere, just like you. They too are between places with no more certainty than you about what will happen at the other end. Pronounce a silent blessing, she concludes, and pay attention to what happens in the air between you and that other person, all those other people. I've tried this. In fact, I've done it a few times at the airport because what else are you going to do? I have noticed something in me softens, something lets go, something lightens. Something does indeed seem to happen in the air between us. They are no longer just a random stranger against whom I will have to vie for my place in the boarding line. They become a person, a human being to whom I have just given a tiny little part of me, of my attention and my hope. And what I gain is just a little bit, in Taylor's words, of a feeling of kinship that wasn't there before. And a little bit of connection, or recognition maybe, that we're not as separate after all as we so often seem. And it's interesting how that shift, that invisible shift that can occur when we choose to bless, we don't know what will come of that. When we pivot from one way of experiencing to another, when we turn from what is, for many of us, a habitually defensive stance like that one in the boarding line, to an intentionally open and giving one, we don't know what might grow in that space we're creating with our blessings. Pierre Praverand, author of The Gentle Art of Blessing, he didn't know. All he knew was that he was blocked. His stance toward his life was more than defensive. It was angry. He was hamstrung by resentment. He had been working as an international developer, just living his life, when he found himself forced by unscrupulous co-workers into what he calls vocational harakiri. He had been put in a position, he writes, where he'd either have to forsake his morals or leave his job. He had been boxed in. He had no out, and he did, in fact, quit. But he finds himself in the wake of that decision with a case of all-consuming resentment. He tries to let it go. He meditates. He attempts to forgive. But the faces of those people, that action, it haunts him. He's restless, and he can't let it go. Until one day he happens to stumble across the phrase from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, "Bless them that curse you." And it strikes him. And he tries it, blessing them, wishing for them what he wants for himself, showering them mentally with contentment and wholeness and happiness, wishing them well in total sincerity from the bottom of his heart. It didn't start out that way, but it grew into that over time. And something begins to change, not only in his relationship to those people in his mind, but in his relationship to his life. He starts to do it more, blessing not only those ex-coworkers, but blessing people on the street, in the post office, or the supermarket. He does it while washing dishes, while falling asleep. Little by little, he writes, this gentle art of blessing people became like a silent song and one of his greatest joys. It changes his life. And sometimes would change things around him, too. He describes in his book an incident of encountering an unusually uncooperative person one time whose help he needed to run an event. The man was inexplicably hostile and stubborn, and Pravran found himself becoming angry in return, as you might expect. But then Pravran remembered his new habit and began mentally blessing the man instead. So even while his event planner continued arguing with the guy, he's blessing his integrity, his health, his relationships. He's blessing that man in every way he can imagine, and then he blesses him some more. And at some point, he actually does notice this man's attitude begins to change. His belligerence fades, his cooperativeness surfaces. The man eventually does what they need and apparently even smiles as he does it. Which is not to say that blessing other people should be the new secret weapon to get people to do what we want. But there is something about changing the quality of how we show up that can make things better for everyone. Changing something in the air between us. We soften, and sometimes other people pick up on that, and then sometimes they soften too. It's interesting. I had started out basing this sermon on the premise that as you look for blessings in your life, you open up to the beauty that's already here, and as you open up to the beauty that's already here, you are able to share it more and more. So as you find your blessings, you become a blessing to those around you. But in the process of writing it, I found myself seeing almost the opposite. As we practice blessing others, as we practice blessing the world around us, we find more of our own blessings in the process. As though we simply can't bless others without opening the door to a recognition of the blessings we have ourselves. But maybe it doesn't matter which way it works. Because whether we start with our intention to extend ourselves to others, or whether we start with an intention to expand our awareness of all the good life has already, we gain. And we can't help but give it away. And sometimes, blessings are just all around mutual, like that. Just a few weeks ago, I was with Celia Humphreys, our one and only Celia Humphreys, a few days before she died. Nance Reeser and Laura Evans were there too. Celia was not doing well that day. Her eyes were half closed. When she spoke, it was very slowly and hard to make out. She was awake, but she was so weak. So there we were, the three of us, me and Nance and Laura. But what could we do? There is so little you can do. But Celia knew. She said something to me. It was hard to make out. I didn't understand immediately. I had to ask her to repeat what she had said. "Grab my arm," she said. Grab her arm. Was it hurting? Did she need me to get a nurse? No, just grab the arm. Okay, best to do what she asks. I placed my hand on Celia's arm as gently as I could. Then she nodded toward Nance and said to her, "Grab her arm," indicating mine. We were all puzzled by this point until Nance suddenly got it and explained it to the rest of us. This was a healing circle, something they would do sometimes in the women's group. Celia was asking for a healing circle, a blessing for her, a blessing for her health. So I held Celia's arm, Nance held mine, Laura held Nance, and Laura held Celia's other arm. And with the circle complete, we blessed Celia and we sang to her and we wished her well in all the ways we could think of. And that room filled with this gentle, sort of half awkward kindness that is hard to describe. At some point, I know Celia said to us, or maybe it was just to me later, how much she loved people. "You let them know," she said to me, "that I love them." I told her I would. I didn't know at that moment that she would recover almost completely, it would seem, the following day. And I didn't know at that moment that her recovery would be short-lived and that we would lose her just a few days later. But what I did know in that moment was there was something in the air between us. And I did know in that moment an appreciation of Celia and of life that is always there, but that found me from the inside out. And I did know that we were blessed. May we experiment with blessing each other. May we pay attention to the many ways we who are here on this earth are already blessed. May we be blessed. May we be a blessing.